Welcome to the Danger Close podcast, presented by Six Hour. My guest today is my friend, Chris Pratt. And if you've followed me for a while, you know that there is only one person that I ever thought of bringing James Reese to life, and that's this guy. Without further ado, Chris Pratt.
What spoke to you about The Terminalist after of all the things out there, and you read it at a point where you can do pretty much, I mean, you have options at this point, and you read it, and you want to do it. What was that thing that made you want to do it?
Well, I mean, I think that, first of all, I mean, I had really loved the notion, and especially at the time, right? Like, I'm not sure, you know, you kind of always have your, I've always had my finger on the pulse of how I'm perceived. And you want to kind of keep surprising people. And I felt, at least back then, that people were going to be very forgiving of me for some reason. Like, they liked the things that I was doing. They liked whatever I seemed to stand for in their mind at that time. Mm-hmm. I'm not sure it's exactly like that anymore. There's factions of people who dislike me.
There's no getting away from that.
It felt like there weren't at the time. Yeah. And I thought to myself, I bet you I could rip somebody's guts out on camera and not lose an audience member. And there was like an opportunity because, you know, obviously based on the book, what people know of the series now, it departs from the book, but there was a whole piece. I think it was Tedesco, maybe down in.
It was the lawyer.
Florida.
Yeah, it was the lawyer. Yeah.
Was that the lawyer Tedesco? Was that his name Tedesco?
No, Mike Tedesco was the other guy. So we did switch. The lawyer, I always want to say the name of like the real person I was thinking of. So
oh, yeah, no, don't say it. Okay. There's a lawyer and yeah. he gets gutted and he walks around this. I just remember that. Like, so I looked at it as an opportunity to really stretch and surprise people and try to, again, you know, prove myself in a way. Like the way that I got to when I did Guardians of the Galaxy and everyone was like, the fat guy from Parks and Rec is going to be a Marvel guy. No, he's not. It's going to be a bomb. It's going to be a fail. No one's going to watch it. Like, I like the challenge of saying, like, I think you have an idea of who I am, audience members. I'm gonna flip that on its head. I'd like to surprise you. It's an opportunity for me to challenge myself. So I saw that in the character. And I think that there are a few opportunities for me to have done that in a very few various ways that I could have done that. And really what made this one particularly special, apart from just like how well it was written, the character in itself and how much I loved the book and I loved the world, you know, I think my relationship with Jared drove a lot of it into action.
Yeah.
Because you can have a lot of irons in the fire, you know, something comes in, you go, yeah, I get that. Like I think I have the rights to a couple of different stories that I would really love to tell. Mm-hmm. But my relationship with Jared and knowing that he and I could do this together, yeah, and sitting and watching movies with him where he was constantly calling out bullshit.
Uh-huh.
He's like, that's not what it's like. Right. That's dumb. I don't, you know, that it would never happen like that. Yeah, that's some Hollywood bullshit right there. Like I was thinking to myself, I don't pick up on this stuff. Mm. I, you know, a lot of what I know, everything now it's different, but at the time, everything I knew of combat came from film and television.
Right.
And just like a lot of writers and a lot of scripts that you read, their knowledge of what happens on the battlefield comes from the things they've seen in film and television or potentially read in books. They don't have that on the ground experience. And I knew having Jared as a partner,
yeah,
we could reach a level of authenticity for him, for you, for members of the Spec Ops community. He's the perfect filter because if it doesn't work, he'll sniff it out.
Yeah.
So like being able to have that type of authenticity was great. The prospect of doing all of the tactical training and the physical training required is a massive challenge. I thought that would be amazing. And Jared and I could do it together.
Yeah.
And so, you know, my relationship with Jared and the closeness there really was probably the extra fuel needed to really get this going. I mean, he truly deserves the credit for this entire thing being pushed forward. And as we move forward into this world and expand the Jack Carr Cinevision universe, Jared will be a huge part of that.
Owning a rifle is an awesome responsibility. Building rifles is no different. Started in a garage by a Marine veteran more than two decades ago, BCM, Bravo Company MFG,
designs, engineers, and manufactures life-saving tools built to a professional standard. BCM builds professional-grade AR rifles and offers a huge and expanding line of upgraded accessories for the rifle, including buttstocks, pistol grips, optic mounts, handguards, vertical grips, and a lot more. BCM is partnered with veteran American Special Operations Forces instructors to ensure our customers have access to proven training to employ critical hard skills under stress. Every BCM product is a collaboration between our design, engineering team, and combat veteran end users. BCM components improve handling and reliability in all scenarios, addressing shortcomings discovered in real-world conditions with legacy systems. We assume that when a rifle leaves our shop, it could be used in a life-or-death situation. Each component is hand-assembled and tested by Americans in Heartland, Wisconsin. Bravo Company MFG is an employee-owned company. Visit us on the web at bravocompanymfg.com and on Instagram at bravocompanyusa.
And, you know, I love it. I love the idea of being able to continue our partnership and our friendship and our working relationship for the next, you know, you, Jared, me, and all of the members involved, continuing to just make great content for the audience that you aim that book at and that we got to, you know, piggyback onto and find with our series with Amazon.
Yeah.
Oh, so man. that was the impetus. That was it. I kind of rambled there.
Oh man, I love it. Jared, I mean, amazing. And he's Boozer for those listening or watching. That's Jared. He's Boozer in the show. Also tech advisor, producer, on set every day, along with Raymond
Goza and Max writer. Adam.
Like the, yeah, exactly. Amazing writer, by the way. I mean, his changes and recommendations and all that was just next level. Very different show without Jared involved, without Max, without Ray, like that team there every day on set. Very different show without those guys and without the trust. And you talked earlier about it being like a military operation, and it was. When I walked on set for that first time in that first episode and I looked around, I saw, Antoine, that's like the commanding officer right now. Yeah. Okay. And there's Chris. He's setting the tactical level tone like a troop commander or a platoon commander would. It also happens to be what you're playing in the show. Coincidentally, you know, you're bringing all this energy and to the set. And then I'm like, okay, there's the mobility guy. We have a mobility guy in the SEAL team. There's the explosives guy. Hey, we have a breacher. We have an explosives guy. There's the armorer. Guess what we have in a SEAL team? The armorer. And guess what you need to do? You need to feed all these people. There's craft food services. I mean, so many things that were the same. And then also, so many people came up to me on set and they didn't need to do this. When I'm sitting in that video village thing with my set and my chair and headphones on, and so many people would come up to me and say, hey, I've been involved, from craft food services to makeup to wardrobe, they'd come up and say, hey, I've been involved in hundreds of these things in Hollywood and none of them have felt like this. And they made a point to come up and tell me that they didn't need to. And so many people did that. And that's a testament to you and Antoine at the top, like setting this tone that was encouraging to everybody on set. They wanted to be there. They wanted to be doing their best work. And, you know, I have nothing to compare it to, but all of them did because they're at the top of their games, meaning that they've done this before. It wasn't anybody's first time out doing this type of a show. And that was really cool. And that just speaks to you and Antoine and your guys' character and what you bring to these projects. And it's just next level. And it did not go unnoticed by every single person on set.
Oh, that means a lot. Thank you. That does mean a lot. And I hear all these stories. I've had a couple of instances that I can understand where people are coming from, but boy, can a project be ruined by failed leadership from the most influential people, from the number one on the call sheet. I mean, if they have a bad attitude, everyone has a bad attitude. It really starts right there at the top. Yeah. And not to say that I'm right there at the top, but in this project, anyone who's at that level, who's number one on the call sheet, they have a real responsibility. And oftentimes they don't, you know, I saw it when I was younger. I've worked with people who were just assholes, man. Like at the top, they had all the power and they forced people to respect them by being a bit tyrants. And I would see in the moment them getting exactly what they wanted and being pretty good at their job. Yeah. And that was early on in my career. And I remember distinctly thinking like, oh no, this actually might not be cut out for me. Cause I don't really have that. Yeah. I just don't have that,
on that gene.
I didn't really have that in me. You know, I think it's a thing like to be completely indifferent to whether or not you've just pissed off a room full of people.
Right.
Just so you can get your way. Like, I don't have that in me. I'm too much of like a pleaser, I think, you know, like,
well, so it's just respect and,
like,
you know,
yeah. But nonetheless, at the time I was a little nervous. I was like, oh great. That's what you have to do to get to the top. I really want to go to the top. I honestly don't know how to do that. So, but then, and then in subsequently I've seen, that has a very, that gives you a short shelf life, because the people that you are pissing off, like, you're making life difficult for people around you. Guess what? They're going to continue to have a career, and at some point it'll be up to them whether or not they're going to hire you. Yeah. And they will say no. They'll be like, nope. I've been through that.
Yeah.
You know, fool me once. Nope. Right. I've dealt with that asshole. Not going to have him on set anymore, because you know, the person who was the PA or the person who was the second AD, now they're running a show. They're a UPM. They're a first AD. They're running these shows. So like, the people you see on the way up, they're going to see you on your way down. And, and you know, it benefits, not that that's like my motivating factor, is like, you know, some cunning way I'm planning in the future for people to take care of me by being nice to them. It's just kind of inherently who I want to be.
Yeah. And it seems like it'd be miserable to go through life the other way. And you get to choose that attitude. Like, you get to pick when you wake up every morning. Somebody tell the kids, I say, never miss an opportunity to make somebody's day. And I saw you do that every single day on set. I saw you do that. And so you live it. You might have never thought of it, but you do that every day. You do that as a person. Like, that's who you are. And you do it every single day.
That's nice. Thanks, brother.
Well, yeah. And you did it. We did it with the show too. I mean, to have Amazon come to the plate, also with these veteran organizations, with the Brain Treatment Foundation, with Rescue 22 Foundation. We had Best Defense Foundation, these World War II veterans there in their wheelchairs at the premiere. Awesome. I mean, incredible. Donnie Edwards' Foundation there. And I mean, to have those guys there, I mean, they're all creeping up on 100, or they're already over 100.
Wow, you're right. That's where we are in time. I mean, the Greatest Generation, if they served in World War II, they might be over 100 now, and they may have been 16 or 17 when they served. I mean, that's how much time has gone by.
Yeah.
Like, that generation is in their final hours. It's like, wow.
Yeah.
It's just wild to think. I mean, what is that thing that goes around? Hard times make strong men, strong men make easy times make soft men make hard times.
Oh yeah.
Like, those are some strong men that made some good times.
Yeah. So I think about those guys. I think about them when I was in Buds. I think about them if there's any, when I'm facing whatever kind of adversity or whatever else, how much they sacrificed and how much harder it was for them to give me these options and opportunities that I have, that we have today in this country. So I think about that quite a bit when I'm making decisions that are going to impact the next generation. So it's tough. But those guys, and the youngest ones, all lied. The guys that are like 95, like, they lied about their age to get in. They forged birth certificates, whatever they needed to do to go fight for their country.
Could you imagine someone right now who wasn't old enough to fight forging a birth certificate so they could go and fight? I mean,
different times. Yeah.
I miss that. The closest I've ever seen to that type of unity was probably just in America, just after 9/11, when everyone was waving flags, and, you know, you hate for hard times to unify people.
Yeah.
But, you know, I feel the world in the West seems, in America, seems really divided right now.
Yeah, I know, it's tough.
I wonder if that's the result of it having been
soft. Exactly. Soft times. That's why I like to jump into those pages of the history books, because it can remind us of how hard it was and what was sacrificed for us. And maybe we'd be a little more appreciative of some of those things, and a little kinder also to other people out there, our fellow citizens. But I know you got to go. And
no, it's all right. Speaking of books, see this one right here?
Do you recognize this one? I sure do. Once an Eagle. Anton Meyer right there. Yep.
You got me this book, hard copy, after I finished it. And I read the letter. He wrote me a letter. In the end of it, I would recommend anybody who loves to read, you know, follow Jack's book club recommendation. This is one of the books that he recommended I read to play SEAL Commander James Reese. And I read that. Also, this one here is called Fiasco.
Oh, yeah.
Thomas Ricks. That's a pretty awesome book.
Yeah.
A history book on sort of our involvement, just to kind of get an understanding of what maybe Reese would have gone through. I also read Stephen Pressfield's The Warrior Ethos, which is a quick read and really fantastic.
It is.
Really spectacular. What else did I think those are the three books I read. Once an Eagle. I mean, by the time we started, I was still reading it. Cause that's a big book.
It's a commitment.
It's a commitment.
You can use it as a doorstop for anybody that buys it. Like it does. It will have another use after you finish reading it. Cause that's a long book right there.
But it is a fantastic book. Sam Damon. I mean, wow. Mm. There's this really special, and his relationship with his father-in-law who talks about, you know, the world being obsessed with treating human beings as how they ought to be and not how they are. That whole passage is really powerful.
There's so many good ones in there that are really impactful to me as a leader. And really the message of that whole book, if you encapsulate it, I think, is to see to your character and your reputation will take care of itself. Because those are two different things, character and reputation. But if you see to your character, your reputation will take care of itself. So there's that. And then I love when Sam Damon's talking to his son and says, you can't help what you were born and you don't have much to say about where you die, but you can and you should live the days in between as a good man.
Yeah.
And I just love that passage.
That's beautiful, man. That is so good. I highly recommend that book for people. Isn't that like a mandatory reading at West Point?
It's been on their reading list. I'm not sure. I hope it's mandatory still. Yeah. But who knows today what's mandatory over there. But it should be anyway, because it's an impactful one. And not just for people in the military, but just it's a great story. You learn a little bit about history too, because it spans from pre-World War I all the way up to Vietnam. So you learn a little bit about history in there. So it's historical fiction as well.
Yeah, it is historical fiction in that way. That's really kind of amazing. And from told from the point of view of a person who's enlisted, you know, like a Mustang kind of commander who's works his way up into command and has a respect, but also like a disdain for the person who gets appointed that position and looks at only themselves, the Massengale effect, the character who's just like, you know, I wanted to call Pillar. And I think I did it in one of the takes, but didn't make the moot show. I wanted to call him a Massengale motherfucker.
Oh, I like that. I didn't know that you put that in there. Cause in the book, I put that in there. I say a Massengale ass. It's in there when I describe him in the novel. So I put that in there for people the people that have read Once an Eagle, they'll pick up on it. So that's actually in there as I describe him in the,
book. Yeah. That's incredible. I love that. Yeah, he is total Massengale.
Yep. Yeah, no, big time, big time.